I guess it comes down to just setting new and novel goals. And I think just building new connections in the brain by doing stuff you haven't done before. So, you know, not only is the race new in terms of you're pushing yourself in the whatever 14-hour time period you're going to be running, but all of the time you're preparing for it, you're thinking about it, you're training differently, you're eating differently, you're recovering differently. All of that is kind of fun if you're into that sort of thing.
What is up? I'm Darren, your co-host of Master of Some, a podcast about health and fitness served up as a metaphor for life. If this is your first time listening or you haven't already, please, please hit the subscribe or follow button or whatever you use to listen to us. Make sure that you get alerts when a new episode comes out. We are on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Acast, and a few others. Also, please rate us on whatever app you use and leave a comment. Lastly, send this podcast or your favorite episode to someone that you think would get some value out of this, as the more people that hear about us, the dopest stuff we can do to then help other people, and then the cycle continues forever. Please note, there is a language warning, as we sometimes cuss/curse, and I'd hate to put you in an awkward moment if we slip up and use some adult bad words.
Hello, ladies and germs. I hate when Tim Ferriss says that, by the way.
It's horrible.
It's like, I feel like a science teacher is like trying to make a joke in class. And
he talked about the fact he did it on purpose, like making the weird noises and saying stupid things at the start of the episode.
So that was his goal, was to make everyone feel awkward?
Yeah.
So he wanted to be...
It's kind of a dick goal.
Yeah, but it's cool. He was hyper aware that he was being awkward. It's like super meta. That's what we do.
I'm joking.
But yeah. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. You've got Darren Lake here with other host, Mr. Phil Cross.
Hello.
So this episode, we have a working title or a working kind of subject matter of how do you prepare for, how do you know, and or how do you do a distance you've never done before? Which, if you've been listening to the last episode or you've listened to episodes before, after this, and you're going back to this one, the whole season's theme is the UTA 100 and you accomplishing it or finishing it, correct?
Correct, yeah. And if you haven't listened to the last episode, how dare you? Pull over in your car, download it, listen to that first, then come back. We'll wait.
S1 E1, right?
That's right.
No, S2 E1.
Yeah, and also listen to Good Goals. That's where we peaked. Yeah. Season 1, episode 1.
I think every episode we've gone back and always pivoted to that one. So, Phil, I keep running into ultra runners. And actually, I was speaking to an ultra runner. I worked with him. He was a client. He's never done a road marathon before, right? He's only done 100 and like 160K runs, right?
Yeah, right.
And he's just as, you know, I'm not saying ultra people are fat, but he's just as skinny as me, right?
Sure.
And I was saying something about, oh, yeah, I did a marathon, you know, it was a DIY marathon, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, oh, man, yeah. He's like, and I was like, oh, I'm never going to do it again. He's like, yeah, they're boring, man. You need to get off road. And I'm like, nah, I'm not trying to do more. Like, I'm trying to do less really fast.
Yeah.
So it was just really funny hearing him. And then obviously we had Anna Marie Watson on episode 9, season 1, which you guys probably don't know. It's just the Anna Marie Watson episode. You don't have numbers, really. But, you know, I'm just inundated with these ultra folks. Ultra folk. And you're not converting me, but I'm just really...
None of us are trying.
you're like Jewish people. It's like, we're not trying to convert you. We don't convert people. Like, it's cool. It's cool.
We have cake and craft beer and supreme facial hair. We have ultra beards.
But yeah, man.
We also have politeness. We have manners. Not like road cyclists.
I'm talking about runners. Like, what?
I'm just randomly talking shit on roadies.
So yeah, so you know, just to pique my interest, because I come from the track world, which we had a rant about many, many episodes ago. It's how fast can you go in a short period of time?
Sure.
Versus, oh, I did 100Ks, now I'm going to do 149Ks, or now I'm going to do a 250K. It's like, why don't you just do like the short distance really fast? But
sure.
Again, that's me.
Yeah.
You tie your shoe left. You tie your left shoe first. I tie my right shoe first. I'm black, you're white. Whatever. You know, like, we're different. And it doesn't mean I'm wrong and you're right. But
you are wrong.
What excites you about running a 100K race run?
That's a good question. Firstly, I think it's fair to say I don't get excited about anything, so that's probably the wrong word.
Stoic.
I know, right? It's
AF. Just,
yeah, I know. It's like, but what I find interesting about running it is there is a feeling when you step up to either a new distance or a new format. So if you've never done a triathlon before and you do your first triathlon, even if it's a sprint triathlon and you've run 100K, that's still a new thing that's novel in your world. If you've never done an adventure race before, you've never done a crit before, so it's distance and format that excite me. So it's exploring things. I've never put myself in the pigeonhole of calling myself a triathlete or a runner or a cyclist. I always like to use the moniker just, you know, endurance athlete. And I suppose you go one stage higher and just say just general all-purpose athlete, because, you know, one day I might decide to can the endurance sport for a little while and just concentrate on getting swole. Just get 70s big. Just
swole AF?
Just swole AF. Just lift loads of shit and just do loads of deadlifts and don't walk anywhere and just constantly eat broccoli and chicken. Like, that's what happens, right?
You could powerlift, which is actually, I got into
powerlifting. Would be fun.
This huge, huge side rant. I can't even speak right now. I was a weightlifter.
Yep.
I took the class. We actually had it. It was credit in high school. It was weight training. And to get your, I think it was like a midterm test, you actually had to go to a powerlifting meet.
Yeah, right.
And I got second place, I think. My memory's a bit hazy. But I got second place for my weight class, which is, you know, low. It was 145 pounds or whatever I was.
Sure.
Which is like 68 kilos or something. But I actually could lift a lot of weight for my weight class. Deadlifting. Sorry, I got second place in deadlifting.
Yeah, right.
I've had terrible form, but I could get that fucking weight up and somehow didn't kill myself and snap my back in half. But I remember the high and the feeling of competing.
Yeah.
In that powerlifting. Because I remember being like, what the fuck am I doing? It's going to be big dudes everywhere. And there was like skinny guys and, you know, skinny girls and everyone, because it was weight class based. And you're just competing against people that were the same size as you. And I remember being like, oh, if basketball doesn't work out, I might get into powerlifting, you know.
Sure.
This might be interesting. So now I'm back into weight training again and weightlifting. And I'm starting to see powerlifters now.
Yeah.
And powerlifting just seems way more effective and functional than bodybuilding.
There's something about it, because it's well, Freddie, talking about your track background before, where it's numbers and, you know, metrics, and it's about hitting a mark. Like powerlifting is that, right? Whereas I guess you could argue like bodybuilding for aesthetics is more on the kind of ultra running path, because it's a bit, well, you're running 100.
Segue back to that.
Well, no. Well, if you're running 100K, like you're kind of, there's no real end to it. You're just doing it for the love of, and you just want to pick it up. But I guess it comes down to just setting new and novel goals, and I think just building new connections in the brain by doing stuff you haven't done before. So, you know, not only is the race new in terms of you're pushing yourself in the whatever 14-hour time period you're going to be running, but all of the time you're preparing for it, you're thinking about it, you're training differently, you're eating differently, you're recovering differently. All of that is kind of fun if you're into that sort of thing. So yeah, that's really the reason, like, why it, air quotes, excites me.
All right, so we've gone through the what in episode one, season two, and we just spoke about the why. Now, how do you know? How do you know that you can accomplish it, do it in whatever way you want, just like Whitney Houston? How do you know? How do you know?
Amazing.
It's a good song.
I don't know the song.
Oh, it will be playing.
Okay, good.
It will be playing in this podcast.
Good. Yeah. I'll try and over the background now. But you never know. Like the you know, to have certainty that you can do something you've never done before, but you can believe. Oh my god, that sounded like a start of a Disney movie, didn't it? It's like, you never know, but you can believe in yourself. So there's a bunch of I mean, going back to your example before, so your trail running ultra friend who's never run a road marathon before, when you're just switching up context a little bit, you can be pretty confident. Like, so, you know, he's run 100K, going to a road marathon, okay, he might not smash it, it might be boring, whatever, whatever, but he's probably going to finish. And same thing for me, you know, I've done, you know, Ironman triathlon, so doing a doing an adventure race for 4 hours wasn't particularly scary. So there's that kind of difference where you're just switching up context, but when it's completely out of the realm of anything you've put your body through before, so for me this time that falls into that category, it's running 100 kilometers, the most I've ever run is 50 on the same course. So this is very different. So while I can't know, there's a bunch of signals you can pay attention to that give you a good indication. I guess you can benchmark against folk who've done it before for the first time. So, you know, following training programs from people who've coached athletes to do the event before can give you a good amount of certainty. So if you're following a training program that, you know, 100 people have done to use and used to great success running their first 100, then that can give you a degree of certainty. But at the end of the day, you have to go off blind faith a little bit, I think, that you can do it. And, you know, that leads into some interesting questions, I guess, about mental conditioning and how you frame the race and how you treat your mind leading in.
Yeah, I'll jump in because you've got some notes that I would love for you to talk about. And
yeah.
I think it's really interesting because I watched a movie, Waking Life, which I don't know. Have we talked about it? Did you see that? I sent
it
to you.
Yeah. I haven't watched it in many, many, many years.
I first watched that movie 20 years ago, and I still go back to that movie, and it still blows my fucking mind how heavy it is. There's so many parts to it. Like, you know what? My podcast that I'm doing is like a light version of that. I'm starting to realize I like just really heavy, heavy shit that's layered on top of layers. But there's a really, really cool scene with Ethan Hawke, who I love, and the director, Richard Linklater. He's done like Dazed and Confused. He's done a couple of big movies, and
yep.
He always has Ethan Hawke in his movies. Did Boyhood, which is a beautiful film. He did Before Midnight, Before Dawn, all that trilogy.
Yeah, I've seen
After.
Some of
yeah,
that.
And Ethan Hawke is in that. And
sure, Kat watched all those. I kind of like.
He's a beautiful, like, Richard.
I was in the room.
Richard Linklater is a beautiful director. Like, I just love his style. It resonates very well with me as a creative. And there's a cool scene with Ethan Hawke and the woman from all the Before series. And they're like these illustrated cartoon figures. And it's a super like esoteric movie about quantum mechanics and quantum physics. And, you know, are we real? What is real? Blah, blah, blah. But they talk about how when something's done, it's released into the world. Like, so they're like, there was this study done. And
much like our podcast.
That was a joke. That was a sarcastic joke, right? Because when it's done, it sits on the hard drive for like months.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Before people hear it. Because I'm anal. You've got a whole bunch going on.
No. It's like Joe Rogan. It's just like press record and then it goes out on YouTube like 5 seconds later.
Nah, that's too easy. Can't do that.
Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, side rant. So what's cool is that when a crossword puzzle gets solved and they put the answers out, it's like the people don't even know the answers are out. They don't read the answers. Like, let's say they put it out, you know, in a different time zone. It's a New York Times crossword puzzle. But for some reason, the minute, and I don't know if this is a real study or where the science is behind it, but the minute someone has completed it, it's like it's just floating in the universe and someone plucks it. And then they found that a whole bunch of other people end up completing it.
Yes.
Because, like, this one person solved it. And then, like, 20 other people. So it will go to your, I mean, you got some notes in here about, you know, the 4-minute mile.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Once someone broke the 4-minute mile, a whole bunch of people broke it.
That's because
it's kind of like the permission, right?
Yeah. And the
very long winded.
No, it's a great intro into it. Yeah, exactly. There's a whole bunch of stories like that. I remember watching a documentary at the Banff Mountain Film Festival, and there was this rock that no one could climb, and everyone thought it was impossible. And then some dude did it. And then, like, literally that afternoon, like, 20 people did it who were watching him. They're Oh, wow, that's possible now. Like, and
has anyone done El Capitan?
No. And there's,
I feel like someone's going to die if they do it.
Oh, like, if you haven't watched the documentary Free Solo, Alex Honnold.
I saw the 10-minute trailer. Oh, my God.
We watched it at the Outdoor Cinema. It's phenomenal. Like, it's just super interesting. He's a super interesting cat.
Yeah.
There was a part of the film I thought was fascinating was they did a CAT scan on him and his amygdala just didn't fire with fear response to like certain stimuli. Like usually if you're in one of these CAT scan machines and they show you pictures of like knives and shady looking threatening things and like most people's brains light up, their amygdala fires. Him, nah, just it's like nothing happened. So
makes sense.
He doesn't have the same kind of fear response as a normal human. But anyway, beside the point, he free soloed a El Capitan in the States, like crazy, crazy, crazy climb. I wouldn't be surprised if
800 meters.
I don't know.
I forgot. I think it's 3,000 feet vertical.
It's
vertical, straight.
Yeah, it's pretty much just a wall. Like it's nuts. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if a bunch of people just went ahead and did it now because it's possible. It's been made real in the universe. There's a term for what you were just describing that that I've heard. I'll look it up and put it in the show notes. But there's a very scientific sounding term for what you just described in terms of you don't even know that somebody else has done it, but yet it's out in the universe. But that's kind of getting a bit woo. I think
that's all we do woo woo.
We do woo.
So of course, it's not mind over matter. Like it can't be. I mean, you know, I love The Secret, but I've been saying this. It was a joke. I think I've seen The Secret movie, but
I was going to say, if you actually love The Secret, we might have to like.
I was being sarcastic, okay. Which I rarely am.
Good.
But I'm a big believer in this statement or this quote of sorts, which is, you can Google and research how to do push-ups. Someone can show you how to do push-ups, but you got to do push-ups to get fucking stronger.
Sure.
So, I mean, again, this is the whole like mind over matter is bullshit. I know so many guys, I know one guy in particular, a good friend of mine. He didn't train. He has never trained properly for a marathon. I think he's done like 3 or 4. And he's like, oh, I'm going to muscle my way through it. And sure. I'm like, okay, buddy, when your brain shuts everything down because your body is not ready for it, good luck with trying to muscle through that shit. Because literally your brain says no and it shuts down all your fucking vital systems. But yeah. Please tell me. I'm going to guess we're going into how to train for it, right?
I wasn't going to get into the how to train for it. A little bit, I suppose. I want to get to the brain shutting down the body thing in a second, though. I'd say the mental side of the game is necessary but not sufficient. I like visualization. I like positive affirmations, and I like self-belief. So I think, if there's one positive to take away from things like The Secret, it's setting an intent and having a positive kind of view or positive lens on achieving something, I think is helpful. But the body must be trained to do certain things. Like you could muscle your way through something very short, something, you know, that's within the, you know, within the capability of, if you ramp up adrenaline and you essentially use natural chemicals in the body, you can make yourself strong. You know, the mother lifting the car off the baby kind of scenario.
Oh yeah. And as long as you have the glycogen stored, so anything like below 2 hours,
that kind of stuff.
Person, yeah.
But you know, physical training is required for some stuff. And there's some stuff that's just out of the realm of possibility for some people physically. I know some people don't like this as a concept, and they believe that anybody can do anything. I'm not Shaquille O'Neal. Like, we're all born with, you know, there's the mind and the body are eminently trainable, and we can all do a lot more than we think we can. We can all do a lot more than baseline, you know, if we do nothing. Training has a substantial effect on the mind and the body, but there's a ceiling somewhere. So, you know, again, I'm not Shaquille O'Neal, and he has genetic gifts that I just don't. So no matter how hard I trained, I will not be 8 feet tall and have that amount of fast twitch muscle fiber. Okay, that being said, for a something like a 100K, there's there's ways of you know, there's a training regime, and we'll do a separate episode on the actual you know, the actual specifics and logistics of training itself. But suffice it to say, there's indicators you can use. The Jack Daniels video T chart is really, really good and proven to be very, very accurate. So Jack Daniels is a you know, a famous and storied run coach, and look up his video T chart. We'll put it in the show notes.
Is that VO2 max?
It's based around VO2 max, okay. but basically you can take a given time for a time trial or a race, 5K, 10K, and you can get a pretty accurate indication of what you're capable of for things like a marathon. I don't think the chart goes anything beyond that, and it's also kind of gets thrown out completely when you're talking about an ultra marathon, because hills and trails and all those kind of variables make it null and void. But there are ways of kind of taking a benchmark and saying, if this, then that, based on what other people have done in the world. So if, you know, if most people can do 50K in this sort of time, this far out from a race, and still feel good doing it, and back it up, you know, the next day without, you know, without too much trouble, then you should be in good shape to do it. So, so race sims using well-worn, scientifically proven charts and metrics are all good ways to see if you're physically ready for the event itself. So there's a mental side of training, and then there's definitely the physical.
Congratulations, you've unlocked the random bonus round. What we do is we spin a wheel and we see what random section it lands on. Will it be slide into our DMs, D-Lake's heart rate heartbreak, or rapid fire lightning round? And we have slide into our DMs.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the slide into my DM session, aka talking some shit with Masters of Some, your host D-Lake and
Phil Cross, who only found out what slide into my DMs meant a very short time ago.
Sliding to DMs is direct message, and you usually do it on Instagram, and it's a sexual innuendo.
Yeah,
I won't even go, just Google it. It's probably on Urban Dictionary.
Or you're probably cool and already know what that means.
So we've got one question from a new listener. Sorry, they're actually a longtime listener. And it is Gavin from Balgawa, which I can't spell correctly.
Say it again.
Balgawa. It's up there. It's a suburb before Manly. I can't.
I swear to God, Australian place names are all kind of just
it's Aboriginal. It means you're racist.
They just,
your whiteness is showing. It's okay, Bill.
Why can't I just a good honest name like Burnley?
It's Aboriginal.
Scunthorpe.
They're paying their respects, okay?
I understand. Right. Please don't come after me, internet.
All the hate podcast mail is gonna land in talk some shit. Anyway. Any of you out there want to get into this awesome section, which I know everyone wants to get into, the slide into my DM sections, please hit us up at talksomeshit@masterofsomepod.com. Actually, you know what? Do talksomeshit at themasterofsome.com, because I don't know if I set up the forward correctly, so I don't want it bouncing back. just or hit us up on socials.
Or you could actually slide into our DMs.
You could.
On Instagram.
Oh, shit. Yeah, you could.
Like, you could literally do that.
This is very true. All right, here's the question. So Gavin says, I only have 6 hours a week to train. So that's pretty much, you know, an hour a day, 6 days a week.
Day off, yeah.
And I have, you know, a demanding job, senior level position. I've got kids, family, et cetera, et cetera. I like to go on holidays and have some drinks sometimes, you know, with the boys. Some beers at the bar, you know. I'm Australian. That's what I do. And he wants to know, like, he's been doing 5Ks and 10Ks, a couple triathlons here and there.
Yep.
And he's like, I want to jump into a 50K race, trail run. What the fuck do I do, man?
Okay.
So what does he do, Phil?
You could do it. You can do it. You could definitely, first of all, expectations, goal setting, if your goal is to if it's your first one and your goal is just to complete and it's a bucket list thing, you want to tick it off, then 100%, like, don't even, you know, don't fret the fact you've only got 6 hours a week. I know people who've completed those races on less. So you'd be fine just for getting round. It might not be pretty, but like 100%, you can get round. You've got some kind of aerobic base. So you've been doing triathlons and 5Ks and 10Ks. So it's not a complete off the couch, you know, situation. So that's good. My advice for, and I did this, I've got some personal experience with this, training for Ironman Rote, or Roth, as everyone calls it here in Australia.
Snob much?
Yeah. Okay. Rote. You got to. I'm not even pronouncing it correctly.
Speaking the Deutsch, speaking the Deutsch.
Yeah. Are you saying that with an Italian accent?
Yeah, the speaking the Deutsch.
That's amazing.
I'm actually saying speaking
Sprechen Sie Deutsch.
Fuck me, dude.
Yeah.
Just move to Germany.
Okay. I would, you know. I love Germany.
I love Germany.
It's
love
so
Germany.
Nice.
Everything about it.
Yeah. The pretzels and the beer, like, so good. And Challenge wrote as well, like, they gave out, like, non-alcoholic beer, like, good-tasting non-alcoholic beer on course.
It was Bitburger. Was it Bitburger? They make the best. Oh, no, it was the Czech beer. It was Bitburger. Bitburger makes the best fucking non-alcoholic beer I've ever had.
Is that
had.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's, like, all the way until the back palate. The third palate,
yeah,
it's almost like beer, and then there's this same hollowness, and you're like, oh, it's not beer, it's not real beer. But holy shit, if you're like a recovering addict and it's like Ramadan or you just can't drink actual alcohol, it is the best damn thing.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
this was Erdinger, but it was good anyway. So for that, like, work and life got crazy, and I was intending to give it a good crack, but I only had about 8 hours a week to train for an Ironman, which is, you know, pretty analogous to an ultramarathon as well. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a decent base going into it, so there was that. But my answer in that situation was polarized training.
What's that?
Kind of the 80-20 rule. So 20% of the training was really, really hard. So maximum effort, like, you know, really anaerobic sprints, leaving it all out there, VO2 max stuff, like 1-2 minute short efforts, 30-second efforts, but really kind of maximum effort stuff. And then 80% of my training was kind of, you know, more long, slow distance, kind of stuff. So I would suggest an 80-20 approach for that. So you're going to want to get in long runs. You're going to want to, you know, eke out some time each week, like a block of time to do, you know, the sort of 2-hour, 3-hour runs. Because realistically, for a 50K, like something like the, you know, the Ultra Trail 50 or the Jabalani Challenge or the AAA 50, like, you know, some of the you know, the popular ones in Australia, you're going to be out there for, you know, 6 hours, maybe 7 hours. And, you know, you're going to want your long runs to reflect that somewhat. So you're going to be wanting to dedicate at least, or build up to at least, half of your training volume being a long run of kind of 3 to 4 hours, like to get that, you know, to build up that endurance. And then the rest of your time, short, sharp sessions. So negotiate with the family, eke out some time, you know, on the weekend or early morning, or, you know, take some, you know, little time off work or whatever you need to do, like shuffle your life around. Make sure you can get those long runs in, and then the rest of the time dedicate to really short, sharp, hard stuff. And that would be my sort of suggestion for a minimalist training program.
And there you have it.
Yeah, pretty simple. It's totally doable, though.
You've just slid into our DMs. Thanks for playing, ladies and gentlemen. Now back to the Master of Some. So you're talking about all this mind stuff, and obviously you just brought in some analytical and, you know, evidence-based facts or formulas that you can use.
Sure.
But since we're big on meta and, you know, using your brain here, what can you do to train your mind to get yourself ready for something that's double the distance you've ever done, double the longest distance you've ever done in your entire life?
Sure.
Because you're going to be racing it. You're not just trying to finish it, right? You're trying to get I'm trying to get that wrestling belt, right?
Yeah, yeah. I win the wrestling belt. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And then I'm going to smack somebody with it off the top rope. Yeah, for sure. So there's the obvious ones. So there's, you know, there's meditation and visualization. And so I heard a great frame about this the other day. I think it was Sam Harris on Joe Rogan's podcast talking about this, and how even in the 1950s, exercise was the domain of weirdos and freaks. Like, the guy who exercised was the guy in the leopard skin leotard with the handlebar mustache at the circus, you know, the strong man. Like, and normal people just didn't really do it to any great degree. Like,
well, they got the exercise. I mean, sorry to interrupt you, sir, but I think that was the time that the baby boom was around that time. World War II was, you know, the remnants of World War II were fading away. Economies were fucking doing really well.
Yeah.
Everyone got lazy as fuck. The car was supreme.
Sure.
Suburbs were sprawling.
Yep.
It was, why do that thing when you can just pay that thing to do that thing for you?
100%.
So I think people got their exercise by doing yard work or working in the farm or the mill. Oh,
completely.
The, you know, the factory or whatever. And then I think the sugar industry ended up doing what they did, and that's how everyone got fat. So, sorry, I skipped it. I had a lot of stuff in my head, and you didn't hear it. But it was more like, it's funny that no one exercised back in the 50s.
Yeah.
But how come we're way more overweight than we ever have been? But that's a conversation for another day. But it's
completely.
You know, it's mostly diet. It's not the activity level.
Sure. And I was more coming at it from the lens of it being a normal social thing to do. So we know now training the body and having a physical exercise practice is a normal and healthy thing to do, right? And like, if somebody doesn't exercise at all, you'd think they're a weirdo. And if you don't exercise at all, what the fuck are you doing listening to an endurance sport podcast?
Oh, mic drop.
I know. Right? Just delete the unsubscribe now. Lazy. Anyway, no, I'm joking. We love you. Please exercise.
No, we don't. We don't. Why the fuck are you listening to us and you don't?
If they're intending to exercise, hey, if you've come here and you want to get your shit together and this is your inspiration, like, then everyone's got to start somewhere.
True. Yeah.
We're not hating on that.
True. Because someone can go actually really far back and then be like,
I was a fat kid. Like, I was like,
why the hell would they want to listen to us, though, if they're this deep? Now we got questions about our fan base. Who are our fans? Who are you?
Let us know. Anyway, so it's, you know, exercise wasn't a normal society. It wasn't a societal norm. It is now. Training the brain isn't a societal norm. Meditation is still the purview of kind of outliers. Not everyone meditates. It's the 1% that meditate. Still,
even with the apps.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's still uncommon, and most of the people, even the kind of people who would be inclined to do it that I know from, you know, from work and social life and friends and all the rest of it, people who I would think would do it every day don't. Like, they it's like, oh, you're still doing Headspace, you're still doing Sam Harris's, and they drop off. They don't do it. By the way, I'm at 1,700 days and counting as a run streak on Headspace.
Intense.
I can't miss.
I'm about to hit my 1 year in 2 months.
Oh, nice. Oh.
Yeah, but I fucked up because sometimes I just meditate without the app.
Yeah.
So I've actually missed the day.
Yeah.
Here and there, and then it resets, and it heartbroke me. But then I was like, fuck that. I've actually done it.
Yeah.
Like, I know I've always meditated every day. But
sure.
Anyway, I digress.
All good. But it's training for the mind. It literally is training for the mind. If you can pay attention to the breath, if you can pay attention to an object in the room and keep catching your mind when it wanders to other things, that is weightlifting for the mind. You're doing reps, and that keeps your that you know is helpful in an event where you have to pay attention to the trail for 14 hours or however long I end up being out there. So I think literal reps for the mind is an absolutely key thing. You know, I'm a big fan of NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, so how I'm languaging the race to myself as I'm going through, making sure I'm not, you know, I'm not telling myself stories about how much I'm in pain and how much this is hurt and how much I want to quit, etc. So I think watching the stories I'm telling myself and watching the state I'm putting myself in by telling myself stories, because physiology follows focus and language. So if I'm telling myself something, I'm changing my physiology, and I'm using that to my detriment. So I can use that as a positive factor. And then there's training the central governor as well. You touched on this earlier, the body shutting, the mind shutting down the body. You know, so there's no physical reason why we should slow down at certain speeds. Like, think about it. Like, are your muscles actually going to break? Like, what's stopping you in certain circumstances?
Yeah, like back in the day, I thought it was lactic acid that was building up, and then they found out that it's not.
No.
That it's actually your brain.
Well, lactic acid isn't even the thing that this is just one of those things that keeps persisting. It's not the lactic acid in your muscles that burn. It's not. It's the hydrogen. lactic acid is actually a fuel substrate that gets picked up by the liver and reused. Lactic acid is actually fuel. There are supplements with lactic acid in it. So lactic acid isn't the thing causing the burn. It is a byproduct of muscle usage.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, sorry, complete side rant.
Oh, that's good to know. So lactic threshold is still a thing?
Yeah, but it's not the lactic acid that causes the actual feeling of kind of fatigue and pain in the muscles. That's a complete misnomer, and it persists today. Yeah.
And lactic acid has nothing to do with lactose. It's not milk.
No. It is not milk. You are correct, sir. But training the brain to train the body is a real thing, and one of the ways I'll check out Tim Noakes on this for a whole lot more, and his central governor theory. But some things you can do to train your mind to resist fatigue and resist pain and resist physical sensation. Sitting in the sauna is one of my favorites. Sitting in the sauna is really, really good for race preparation. It produces heat shock proteins numerous benefits for longevity, et cetera, et cetera.
There's been some studies that I found with the sauna, doing them within an hour of your hard workout, your hard effort.
Your erythropoietin increases.
Yeah.
EPO production.
Proper EPO is produced. Yep. But it's got to be within that time frame. So I'm trying to find a fucking sauna that's not $1 million, that's local enough and open early enough when I do my hard training so I can... Ian Thorpe?
Yeah.
Boom.
Yeah.
I'm on it.
Yes.
I'm on it, good sir.
I used to do that. That's a real thing. But just sitting there and noticing... Again, there's no real physical... You're not going to pass out, but that panicky sensation you get that just means you have to get out of a sauna, we all know that. Like, you're in there, it's just like shit, 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 and it starts feeling...
I don't get that. I've gone in many saunas
with
people.
Maybe you, bro. Not me. I can stay in there for 4 hours.
You?
No. I'm just making fun of you.
Oh, yeah, man. Maybe it's because I'm black. I don't know. I could stay in a sauna for long, man. Like, motherfuckers.
Are we going to have a sauna off?
People be trying to... I'm not lying. Every time we go into that sauna, my boys are like, oh, and I'm like, dude, I'm fine. They're like, oh my God. I'm like,
it's on.
I'm from the tropical region.
It's on.
You see the skin? You see the sweat rate that I have?
I don't think I'm going to win now, but it's on.
I sweat profusely for a reason. I love the heat for a reason.
All right, it's on. We're doing it.
Actually, you know what? I think my body, I did some DNA, I did the genetics testing, and I ran it through Found My Fitness and a couple other sites.
Yep.
I have the genes for legit aerobic. I should be doing ultras.
You should be.
I have the genes, and I the way I sweat and the fact that I love heat,
yep.
I actually have the propensity to handle it.
Yeah, and the training to endure the heat. I seriously, one of my secret weapons in preparing for any race, and every Ironman I've done well, I've made a strong habit of getting to the sauna several times a week, for the central governor training, but also for the physiological benefits of, again, heat shock proteins, EPO, all the rest of it. It's sauna. Heat training is real, but yeah, sitting there as long as you can, and 2 minutes more next time, and 2 minutes more the time after that. Don't pass out. Don't crack your head. Don't blame me. This is a disclaimer. Don't listen to anything I've said ever. Best disclaimer I can give. But I go to the sauna a lot, and I think that's my secret trick for training the brain for things like this.
So I appreciate all that, Phil. Again, you've been giving me a lot of insight on on what it takes to run 100 kilometers and 61 miles for you, imperial focused, metrically disinclined, handicapped people out there. But I ended up Googling, like, is it okay to run a 5K, like, you know, every week? Like, what's the benefit? What's the downsides of running 5K? And I ended up stumbling upon some interesting shit on Reddit, which is actually, you know, Reddit's like it's a unfiltered place of some pretty good, you know, random anecdotal content and answers of sorts. Like, I'd take Reddit information over Yahoo Answers or something any day.
It's at least user curated, like, and the user base there is. True. It depends on the.
It's upvoted. So you only see the good shit. Yeah, you're right.
There's user curation there, which is
pretty
legit. And
if smart people on Reddit, you know,
if it's like, the right subreddit where there are smart folk, if it's the Donald, then maybe
the Donald. Maybe is that alt right?
That's the Donald. You've not heard of the Donald?
Oh, no. I'm starting to stay focused because we're gonna end this. We're gonna end this podcast.
Please do.
All right. So I'm just gonna basically quote. I just did a copy and paste, and you know, I'm pretty transparent with what happens here. You can run, this is from the subreddit, you can run 5K every day. You can probably put a decent race out every week, but most people only personal record, PR, monthly or so once they get past the initial gains, which is basically, you know, the plateau, and it's the whole, like, learner's curve. But you need a combination of these things to get past that and to start seeing, you know, gains over the long term. And, you know, whether this is right or wrong, whatever, that's up to you. But one is actual training improvement. There's a lag time between a run and its benefits to you, mm-hmm. which is really, really, it's hard for people. And its benefits and its downsides, too, because you can actually go for a long, fast run when your body is not ready for it, or your body's breaking down, and you won't actually know that was a bad run until days later sometimes.
Sure.
Like, you know, like the niggles then turn into, like, oh, you pull your hamstring or you tear your Achilles. That's days after that run. It never usually happens on that run. But yeah, again, so there's the lag time. I think it's 10 days is what some people think. You know, you do a workout, you see the benefits from that workout 10 days later.
This is
VO2 max. This is like track stuff. Fast.
Sure. And then different adaptations happen at different times.
Yeah, like depending on who you are, what you're doing.
Aerobic, anaerobic, muscular, et cetera, et cetera.
Good conditions. So this is race wise. A field of runners that will push you. So the good conditions are a field of runners that will push you. You end up being, you know, in a race with a bunch of people that are just moving.
And you have someone many times.
Yeah, you have someone to chase.
Just trying to keep up with a pack or something. And it's.
Yeah.
I've ended up PBing big time.
Exactly. And you're like, where the fuck did that come from?
That's right.
And then there's the motivation to actually personal record. So, or PB, as you know, as they say in Australia, which is the belief. Sorry. So that's the motivation to actually PR. It ties into the belief that you can beat your previous time. Now, this is a big one, and he notes this because I realize that a lot of people around me, I'm constantly like, yo, dude, you should be running a sub 40-minute 10K. How are you not doing that? You've ran, you know, a 18-minute 5K. You've ran a 40-30 10K. You ran a 129 half marathon. Why are you not running a 39-minute 10K? And I realize that it's because they don't believe they can do it. And this is a quote from Reddit. A lot of people actually struggle with the last one, which is that. Often people find it mentally tough to break through. This is just an example. The 25-minute barrier or, you know, 20, 19-minute barrier. Even though their performance difference isn't so much the mental effort is. So to sum that all up, it's like you've done it already. You can do it in your training.
Yeah.
You pretty much have done it in a shorter race or a longer race.
Yeah.
You just can't put it together because you don't actually believe it. And I call it giving yourself permission, which we said already.
Yeah.
And that was the whole reason why I wanted to do the sub 3-hour marathon with the least amount of training. And that was the reason why, you know, I want to get down to a 34-minute 10K, why I want to run a 15-minute, 15:59, 5K, because I basically can do it. Like, it's there. I just haven't given myself permission to run faster. And I started doing that last season. I started, like, doing VO2 max workouts, and I saw the gains. Like, I mean, it's so true. The VO2 max workouts, they're the best way to get fit. Like, it's dangerous at times. Like, if you overdo it,
it is.
You could definitely, you know, burn the fuck out, and you can start getting injuries. I was in the danger zone for a bit. But, yeah, man. Like, I started training and seeing myself do those efforts at that time, then I was going into the race And I was mentally like, I've been here before. I've done these times before. I haven't put it all together.
Yeah.
You know, I did 5x2Ks at this pace with a minute and a half rest in between. But you put it together, it's like, cool. And then you add in the race environment. I got my race shoes on. Yes, I have race shoes, race running shoes now. I'm a big boy.
What do you use?
I've got these Mizuno, like, super light, like, racing flats. Like, they are...
They weigh, like, 10 grams.
Dumb light. Like, yeah, I took it to my podiatrist. Yeah. And he was like, oh, please do not run longer than 8Ks on these. And I was like, what? He's like, you will injure yourself. He's like, holy shit, they're light. But yeah, man, I put those on and I do butt kicks and I'm like, it feels like I have nothing on me.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, you know, combination of that, race day, I'm chasing someone, whatever it is. And, you know, you end up running a personal best. So I'm really looking forward to this season. I've had a bit of a downside. Sorry to keep ranting on this. It's a podcast, guys.
It's good.
I'm just talking.
It's good.
But yeah, man, the permission thing is huge. I don't know if you have anything to add to that, good sir.
Boom. Darren Lake, everyone. Darren Lake. No, nothing to add. Permission is huge. Like, giving yourself permission to succeed, to achieve your goals. Again, it's not the secret. It's not the only thing. You got to train, but it's massive. Well said.
Cool, that's it. That's a wrap.
And that's it. As always, we really appreciate you taking the time to listen to us ramble about shit that we think you could find of interest and that we find of interest and hopefully help everyone out there. Again, please subscribe, rate, comment, and share on whatever you use to listen to us. If you have any questions or concerns or even suggestions for episodes or, hell, if you want to be on the show, hit us up on the socials, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, or talk some shit at masterofsumpod.com. That's spelled the normal way. Thank you so much. Peace.